Hello, I'm Tara. Continuing with our discussion on service management, let's focus a little bit on service quality management now. ServQual, a term that you'll come across a lot during this module and also when you study it yourself, was a concept which was developed by Parasnath, Zeet and Berry. And basically, it's a concept which talks about the gaps in what a customer expects and what he perceives has been delivered to him and how this can be made measurable. Now, when we were talking about tangible and intangibles, one of the things we mentioned was the difficulty in measuring. But there are models now in place to be able to measure these gaps so that you can respond to them, whether it is through surveys, whether it is through assessing the accuracy, order accuracy, whether it's assessing churn rates, which is nothing but how often do customers leave you, the rate at which customers leave you, whether it is assessing the FCR, which is nothing but first contact resolution. So there are various ways in which service quality has also been made measurable. And these scores can help companies to work on enhancing the whole experience of service quality. So, for example, at a most basic level of measurement, let's say there is a courier company and the courier company commits that within 24 hours, we will deliver to you. Now, let's say they have not delivered. Then there should be some form of compensation, and by compensation, I don't mean monetary compensation, but some form of apology. Let's say you go, you book a hotel and there is some issue with the hotel, either you had a very bad check-in experience or, something else. Then by way of, measuring these things and by responding to your grievance, let's say they give you an upgrade. Let's say they give you, something to make up for it. So there are various forms and ways to respond to gaps in quality as perceived by the customer. There are various ways and models, whether it's the Kano model, whether it is the, Rater model, these various models which help you to measure elements of quality, service quality and customer satisfaction. And CSAT, which you keep hearing from me, CSAT is nothing but customer satisfaction score also, which is very, very useful. So you have a lot of elements in service quality. For example, you have tangibility, that there needs to be a clean physical space to provide the service. You have professionalism, one should be courteous, one should be knowledgeable, one should be polished. You have design elements. So, the design of the service should be such that the consumer customer understands it. It's user friendly. It is visually appealing and feel good to the customer. There's elements of reliability. Can they trust you? There's element of consistency. So, for example, when we're talking about trust, in today's businesses, especially with the digital transformation and the digital world, one of the very, very large elements, important elements is data privacy. Now, when it comes to trust, if there is a brand, no matter how good their product or whatever, if there is skepticism that your data is not safe for them, data could be breached, data could be leaked, then that leads to a massive quality downgrade, And for example, there I had cited about data breaches with IRCTC, but there is an online fashion, beauty retailer, online, offline beauty retailer, where there has been a very common scam going around. And obviously, there is some data breach happening, no matter how many disclaimers the beauty brand puts up, where there are these scamsters who are supposedly calling from this brand and asking you to transfer money for free gifts, etc. And what gets the customers to fall for their trap, despite so much awareness of scams these days, is that these scamsters seem to have knowledge about your last few purchases made from this beauty retailer. So you assume that if this person is who's calling has information about my last few purchases, then obviously, you know, they are calling from the brand who has, you know, access to the system and who can tell. But clearly these are scamsters, and obviously there is some data breach which has happened. Whether it has happened from the point of view of some an employee intentionally sharing this data, or it has happened by way of a hack, you know, by way of some hackers getting access to this data. But now I'm extremely skeptical about dealing with this beauty brand, despite, you know, them having a very good variety, because I don't want to have one of those experiences which, you know, I've come across a lot of people around me having. So it's not something which you theoretically heard about in some news report. It's happening to people around you. So elements of reliability, elements of consistency, is your service experience consistent? Surveys and studies show that most of the customers, you know, 75% plus of the customers, 80% plus want a consistent service experience, whether they deal with you in person, whether they deal with you on the phone, whether it's a chatbot, whether it's on social media. They want consistency. So consistency of the quality, a consistency of your product, service, and this is what will lead to higher customer satisfaction scores and service quality scores. So continuing with this discussion, companies to differentiate themselves have to make sure that over and above their product finesse and features of their product and the perceived value add of their products, they have to also be up the curve when it comes to your quality service that they are offering to you. And some of the ways in which they can know this is, or understand this or assess this, is by measuring lot of data and parameters. And some of those things, for example, are repeat customer. How often do I get a customer who's not only purchasing the first, good or service from me, but he's also coming back to me again and again for that same product, or buying additional products from me? So this becomes a very, I would go back to someone only if I had a very good experience and wanted to enhance my commitment to them. So these elements of service quality become very important, not just in terms of the service transaction, but also in terms of the services after the sale, after the transaction has happened. Because as we have discussed, it is the ongoing relationship and not a one-time interaction which determines whether a customer will come back to you. Some of the studies have shown that it's not simply the resolution which matters, but the speed of the resolution is very, very important to customers. So you resolved something after taking them in circles, dragging it on, and took months and weeks and months and years to resolve something, versus you resolved it in a very speedy manner. The timeliness and the speed at which you respond becomes crucial. And studies show that, you know, that customers who have got a resolution but got a very slow resolution are, you know, just about 15% of those customers are inclined to recommending your brand to someone else. So while you're taking the trouble to resolve something, but the fact that it's being done in a very delayed, slow, inefficient manner ruins it for the customer, and you might end up losing the customer regardless of you providing a resolution or in the case, for example, if an apology is given, that apology given in a speedy manner, in a professional manner, versus that apology given after a lot of delay and a lot of pain lot of fighting, it's useless. You know, you are giving an apology, but the customer is like, you know, I've already like decided in my mind, I'm not coming back to you. So that's the end of that. So time is very, very important when we are talking about service quality. Hence, your FCR, which is your first contact resolution, becomes very important, where the resolution is happening in the first interaction rather than having to have follow-ups and multiple interactions. So sometimes you will see pop-up surveys and measures which will come to you where you, after a complaint resolution with a customer service executive or an interaction on the phone with someone, they will send you a link, and one of the questions they'll ask you is, was this your first interaction? Now, that is, based on your response, all of that data is being analyzed by someone to see the knowledge, the efficiency, and the turnaround time of your customer service executive, and also to help them assess, like, are you likely to come back to them or not. So, for example, stressing on the timeliness factor, there was a case where this lady, unfortunately, her father passed away in 2009, and he had an account with Verizon, the telecom company, and this lady reached out to Verizon and said that please close my father's account with you. The subscription that he had with you, for whatever telecom service it is that he had. And the company expressed their inability to do so because they said that, we need his PIN or password or something. And obviously, she didn't have it. The person who had it, her father, had already passed away. So she even forwarded his death certificate to the company that, look, he's passed away. So based on this, can you please shut it and close it and settle it and, stop billing him? Because on these subscriptions, you automatically get billed at this interval, whether it's monthly, quarterly, whatever it may be. So they didn't do it. And it went on and on for like over a year. Her father's account kept on getting billed and debited and all of those things. And eventually she took her story to the press. Now, when she took her story to the press, then it became very big and it became huge, and Verizon had to apologize and they had to refund the money. And, I don't know if there was a compensation over and above that, a compensation involved, but bottom line, it led to very bad press. And they didn't need to do that. Someone efficient needed to get involved and understand the situation. Of course, there is a way about. No one is asking you to break regulation, but there has to be an SOP of addressing a situation where something like this happens, which would be happening. So this becomes very important. Now, giving you an example, someone had a change of name, and when you change your name, then if you want to do it consistently across everything, they wanted to change their name in their bank account or something, and most people have multiple bank accounts. So they provided all the required documents, all the everything. And 4 out of the 5 banks where they had the bank account, or 3 out of the 4 banks, changed it. And one bank kept on making them run in circles for other documents and just getting back with, no, we need this and we need that. And, eventually they got frustrated and they said that, look, the regulatory requirement can't be different for you versus for the other 3 banks, because they're also banks with a reputation, banks with knowledge. And if they have changed based on this, why are you making me run around for documents which don't make sense? Like, they were asking for, this fourth bank was asking for, their checkbook, a copy of their checkbook in the old name or something, a copy of the check in the old name or something bizarre like that. And now, obviously, when this person has changed their name and they don't have their old checkbook, or they've junked it, or, how will they have a check in the old name? And, the bank has to issue it, but now the name has changed, so the bank won't issue it, and complex. So then they turned around and told the bank that, okay, if you're not being able to do it, and I know that the other 3 have been able to do it, and if it's a genuine issue you're having, then I'm writing to the banking ombudsman, okay? And I will write to the banking ombudsman and let them decide what the issue is, let them resolve. And clearly, it was a case of manual inefficiency, manual lack of knowledge, maybe someone junior who was not going the extra mile and figuring, or rather, forget extra mile, just being accountable and going and, getting the required knowledge from the senior person, or whatever the issue was. It got resolved within an hour. So you see, it got resolved, but the customer was upset enough to then eventually just close that bank account. Because if you're going to give me so much stress, whereas the others are not giving me stress, I don't even care if you give me better fixed deposit rates or lower charges or whatever it is. I don't want to have to deal with you. End of story. So service quality becomes really important. And this first contact request, where I'm again stressing the timeliness of the response, becomes really important, because responding, resolving with a delay, the damage is already done. Okay, it's not always about the money. It's not always about compensation. The damage is already done. So you will have a reputational issue. You will have to buckle up. And at the same time, you probably end up losing the customer and probably enough other customers who, if they find out about it. So service quality becomes extremely important from these points of view, because it's so easy for this person to close the bank account, move somewhere else. It's so easy for people to move from one telecom service to another, from one credit card to another, from name any service, whether it's retail, whether it's banking, whether it is tourism, whether it's travel, people switch loyalties, you know, at the drop of a hat. And technology has made it so simple for people to switch loyalties. So earlier, if there was a process, physical process and effort that was required, today, which would maybe dissuade a customer from switching, their service provider. Today, that barrier is not there. So in most of the time, so it makes it very, very easier for people to switch to your competitors. So it's extremely important that across, whether it is product-based, manufacturing-based, value-based, user-based, you have a quality approach, and there is a commitment. There is a commitment from top management down to the last employee. Once again, coming back to the time factor, if your resolution is unsatisfactory or extremely delayed, chances are the damage is already done. You can't go back and reverse it. You can't reverse time, because this is not a physical, it's not a physical solid product where you can give it to them. It is something which, you know, it's done. It's over and done with. So, when you have examples of people using social media, instantly the whole thing gets blown up and reaches all over the world. So, the other day, someone which wasn't even to do with any service provider as such, but there was a gentleman who was not getting his, he had rented an apartment and he was now vacating. And as is the system where for rental, you have to place a deposit. And at the time that you, vacate, assuming you are following all the other terms of the lease agreement, when you vacate, you are supposed to get your deposit back. If there are any damages, you know, that amount gets settled, deducted. And there was this person who was having a problem in Mumbai, who was having a problem with his deposit return. And deposit can be sizable, 2, 3, 4 months rent, you know, which you give at the time that you sign the lease agreement. And he was having trouble and, you know, out of frustration, really not expecting anything, he went and put it up on Twitter, tagged the news channels, tagged, someone. And even though it was, you know, not the business of the issue got resolved, you know, the police got involved and resolved the issue. So, but damage for the person who was holding back his deposit is already done. He's probably going to, like, you know, tomorrow they're probably like everyone in the building who knows this, and tomorrow if he gets other tenants to come and look at it, the story might get to them, and then no one wants to deal with a person like that, even if they are getting a good deal. So you can't reverse it. What's happened is happened. You will have to live with the negative reputational hit that you have taken, and it's going to take you a very, very long time to regain or recover from such lapses. So return on quality, total quality management, these are the various ways, models in which you can, which see your return on investment, which measure parameters of quality. Now, for example, when I was giving the example of Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola was set up in 1886. It is present in 200 countries, you know, more than 200 countries. Now, they have to maintain a certain consistency of their drink across those countries. There has to be a quality. They cannot just, because, you know, this is not their topmost market out of those 200 countries, smaller market, they cannot let off, you know, they cannot have lapses on the quality front, on the consistency front. So can you imagine the kind of measurements and systems that they have in place to ensure that this consistency and quality checks in on their assembly line, checks on their line of production are being maintained, on their customer line are being maintained. So all of these elements can be measured in some ways. Service quality is basically, as I said, you have a gap of what the customer expected, what he perceives he got from your point of view. You may be like, I have delivered exactly what you expected, but there may, from a customer's point of view, his perception is what is going to come in the feedback, is going to come in the survey, and is what is eventually going to influence his customer satisfaction. That misalignment, that gap has to be done away with. For that, communication needs to be there. For that, you have to have measurability. You have to have commitment at all levels. So, for example, there is a parameter called NPS or Net Promoter Score, and you measure it from 0 to 10. Now, NPS is viewing the customer as a promoter, as a brand ambassador for you. If a customer is satisfied, he is not only going to come back to you and purchase more from you and stay loyal to you, he's also going to recommend your service to someone else. So when you have an NPS score, it gives you a measure of how likely is it that the customer is going to be a brand ambassador for you, promoter for you, recommend you. And there are companies which are very, very sensitive about the lower threshold of below what level this score should not fall. And if it does, then there is a lot of introspection, understanding, communication, feedback, customer interaction, which is done to ensure that that is eliminated and that score improves. Now, these elements can have been made measurable in a lot of ways. So when we are talking about expectations, while there are theoretical aspects to it, world over different models have been used. Now, when quality control and managing customer satisfaction became very, very important, then companies like initially Japanese companies took it very, very seriously and were like pioneers in this. So a lot of Japanese companies adopted various models. For example, Toyota adopted the Kaizen model for excellence. There are other models called the just-in-time models. There are models called the Poka-Yoke model, which was adopted, and which is nothing but reducing error, reducing the margin of errors. So there are a lot of models which are adopted world over at various times in the last few decades, which have helped companies respond to customer quality gaps. Definition of quality, of course, is user-based. How easy does he find it? How functional does he find it? And then, of course, there is value-based, where you have the performance quality. Is the price matching the perceived quality? For example, when you have luxury item, a luxury watch. Now, the price rather of the luxury watch at which it is sold to the customer, it is a value. It is not an indication of how much it cost to produce that watch. So it is the perceived value, and the customer will be willing to pay that value and give you a positive promoter score on that on your product and on your service if he is perceiving that this really, yes, is delivering to me on the quality, the service. If he's investing in a high-end luxury watch, he expects that tomorrow, if he has requirement for after-sale service, any other issues, then you will be on top of the curve as far as the service quality is concerned. So these are various ways in which service quality can be measured. Reliability is your trust, dependability, responsiveness is how quickly willingness and readiness is there, but timeliness becomes very, very important. So whenever I'm talking about responsiveness, I'm repeatedly talking about timeliness, your just-in-time measures. Your timeliness becomes very important. It's not just a resolution, it is the speed of the resolution which becomes very important. Is there knowledge? Is there are you feeling assured? Is there trust, confidence? Empathy is showing that you are sensitive and caring. You know, one is that you are very, very functional about the resolution, and one is really expressing. So, for example, the healthcare industry, it is, you know, you have to have a certain amount of empathy to make the customer feel valued, make the customer feel reassured, and not just functionality cut and dry, because it's something which is so, you know, personable, and also somewhere where the customer is already, you know, maybe stressed, etc., that this is this could, you know, that there is a medical issue to begin with. So empathy would go a very, very long way. Now, when we talk about empathy, which is understanding and putting yourself in another person's shoes, we all know that customer service executives are taught that line. I understand what you must be going through. You know, they've been given a script. We know, you know, they on the phone you would be hearing, you know, main samajh sakti hu aapko kya lag raha hai. But we can tell, is it a mugged up line? Or is it part of a script? Or are they genuinely being able to understand what I'm going through, and hence they are going to invest in addressing the issue that I'm facing? So all of these aspects become very, very important when we are talking about measuring service quality. ServeQual model, as I mentioned to you, you know, the three founders, it measures these gaps and assessing, introspecting, responding to those in a timely manner can help people learn from their mistakes. This gives you a blueprint and a flowchart of how the various elements, you know, the provider, the customer, the various elements which go into this, the creation of this model. Gaps in service quality could take a lot of forms. It could be because of lack of marketing research. It could be because of resource constraints. It could be because of non-cooperative customers. Service design was not optimal. So you have to understand the, you know, when you see the gap, you have to see what the problem was, what its causation was, and accordingly respond in a timely and swift manner. Various other elements of service quality are, depicted here. Now, when I was talking about Kaizen, the Kaizen form of model which was adopted by a lot of Japanese companies like Toyota, then you had that involves the meaning of Kaizen, and the basic theme of the Kaizen model is continuous improvement. So it is not just about achieving, you know, good quality or qualitative scores or excellence in a point of time, but it is an ongoing process which you must keep working on in an ongoing manner. So, for example, when we are talking about response or first contact resolution, or we're talking about response time, the speed of response, we should also keep in mind that very often you can be proactive from a company's point of view, from a service provider's point of view. You can be proactive and prevent the gap to begin with. So we should not only talk about the resolution, we should also talk about the prevention when it comes to quality control. So, you know, very often you will have a general wellness call which will come in. You may not even have realized that, you know, there's something you're not satisfied with, and you know you would perhaps want to like to talk to your customer service agent about, but that wellness call might lead to a satisfaction score which is much higher because they anticipated or motivated you to see an issue before it happened and hence respond to it well in time and prevent it. So various elements that we've been talking, access, very often when you're stuck, you know, when we are going to be talking about models of queuing theory in later chapters, you will see how much, you know, science goes into queuing models and how much just simple lack of access and long holding phone times and queues can frustrate customers very badly and lead to really bad customer service scores and quality, bad scores on the measurement of quality. So little things like this, you would think, you know, if everything else is, fine, then why should something like this affect? But, customer hold times are like one of the worst reasons for bad customer satisfaction scores and for customers giving up and, maybe moving their business elsewhere. So all of these things, right from small courtesy to communication, to reliability, to responsiveness, all of these things become extremely, extremely important. So for example, when we were talking about a product like Google Glass, now clearly there was a lack of communication there in terms of the user friendliness. Or when we were talking about Zio, the sleep monitoring system Zio, there was obviously a gap because customers expected a gadget or a technology to help their sleep disorders. But if there had been proper communication that it's a consumer product, it is not a medical product, then maybe that expectation would not have been there would not have been a gap and a mismatch. So all of these elements individually and jointly impact your customer satisfaction. Once again, when it comes to service quality and customer satisfaction, your employee skill, willingness, motivation, involvement is very, very important. As I was mentioning, the POKA yoke is nothing but a foolproofing mechanism. You have your Kaizen, which is continuous improvement. There are so many other forms of your various forms of models which can be adopted. Now, as we're going to be seeing, there are initiatives taken by different companies. For example, Starbucks has used initiatives like, My Idea, Starbucks Idea, various other initiatives to engage the customer, to ensure that the customer stays involved and is happy with your service. So what is more important, profit or cost when it comes to service quality? Actually, both. To understand this better, let's look at examples of where enhancing service quality led to a significant bottom line growth. So we are all familiar with the Indian conglomerate Tata Steel. Now in 2015, they launched a quality improvement and cost saving initiative called Shikhar 25. Now, as part of this, the endeavor was that over a period of 3 years, through improving their quality, through cost reductions, they were hoping to save more than 1 billion in costs. Now, and obviously then that translates into bottom line enhancement. Now, as part of Shikhar 25, one of the very significant features is that employees across the board were taken into confidence, were taken into loop. The teams that were working on this, they were encouraged to think big, think out of the box, take risks, generate big ideas. Then teams would work on these ideas from a design point of view, from an execution point of view. And what they kept very useful was that they did not have uselessly long meetings. They kept their communication very simple, simple so that their employees understand and for the users also to understand. Because having big ideas, fancy words, long meetings is useless. Also, what they did was that, they would have presentations where it wasn't, stupid, it wasn't irrelevant PowerPoint presentations, etc. But it was, more by way of simple visual aids where the communication happened. So constantly, repeatedly, the interactions, the skill enhancement, the understanding was circulated across the teams and departments. And eventually it led to 3 years down the line, by 2018, saving of not just 1 billion, but it surpassed that by creating a saving of 1.2 billion, dollars. So you see how having teams involved, keeping communication simple, keeping it relevant and not, you know, making it difficult to understand either by way of long meetings, either by way of, you know, presentations with a lot of, you know, data-heavy presentations. By eliminating all of these and making it more easy to understand and execute, by ensuring that their employees who are working on these are not discouraged from thinking, are not discouraged from taking risks, but when they do come up with an idea which is out of the box, it goes through all its checks and balances before being implemented. And not only did it help from this cost-saving point of view, but this whole exercise has made this culture of thinking big, this culture of taking risks, this culture of keeping communication simple, this whole culture has become something which is ongoing. It is not that now 3 years have passed, we have achieved our target, and you know this culture goes out of the window, we go back to our old mundane way of, you know, routine rather way of operating. No, this culture is something which stays in an ongoing manner and is going to continue to benefit the company over a very long period of time. So customer satisfaction is not just a theoretical concept. It is something, it is, you know, where your profits are generated, your costs are mitigated, your profits are generated. So it is very, very relevant from a shareholder value point of view, from a customer, from a company bottom line point of view. So these are various ways in which you can measure return on quality, as we have been talking about certain measures and parameters also, which can be measured.